dream about the structure of the universe. And if you think that the universe, from Prabhupada's description, from the description of Sukadeva Goswami, is very difficult to understand. It is not your imagination that is difficult to understand, because practically speaking, for a common one-headed person, the universe is impossible to understand. It is so complicated, it is so intricate. Krishna explains this in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that no one can understand the beginning nor the end of the material creation. Lord Brahma, nor the demigods, they could not put the universe together by themselves. Practically speaking, at every step, Krishna was there to reciprocate with the devotees' desire to serve. And the universe, the demigods and Lord Brahma, they are devotees. So the universe is practically a manifestation of the devotion of the devotees who wanted to serve Krishna in this particular capacity of putting together the universe. And then Krishna empowers them to do so, because that is their desire. Their desire is to serve Krishna in that way, and Krishna allows them to serve. So who is the one that is making the universe? Ultimately, it's Krishna. In fact, when we say that Lord Brahma, he is an avatar. He is empowered by Krishna. What is empowered? He is the guna avatar of the mode of passion. So what does that mean? That means that Krishna is acting through this personality. So it is Krishna that's actually doing it. And therefore, it is an offense actually to either vilify, criticize the demigods, or also to see the demigods, the devas. To see the demigods is either equal to or independent of Krishna. The demigods are neither equal to nor independent of Krishna. They're empowered agents of Krishna. And therefore, to vilify or to criticize the demigods is an offense, because it's ultimately a criticism of Krishna. Just like you can't, everyone in the country must respect the prime minister. So one can't go over to a police officer or a judge or even an official, a court official, and criticize them, say nasty things about them in their official capacity. It can't be done. It's illegal. Actually, I mentioned it in the newspaper that some lawyer had argued with some in court. There was some argument going on between a lawyer and a court official who was of the feminine gender, and after he argued with her for a half hour, you know, and privately he was speaking to one of his friends, and he said, "That silly cow," something like that. And someone overheard him, and they immediately brought it to the attention of the judge, who I don't know, may cut off his head or something like that. You can't criticize someone doing their work in their official capacity. So similarly, to criticize the demigods is abharat, because it's ultimately a criticism of Krishna. So, the point being that the manifestation of the universe is it's a manifestation of Krishna's desire and the devotion of those whose business is to create the universe. Outside the ocean of milk is another island, Shakadeep, which has a width of 3,200,000 yojanas. That's 25,600,000 miles, which is quite wide. As Kurunchadipa is surrounded by its own ocean of milk, Shakadeep is surrounded by an ocean of churn yogurt as broad as the island itself. In Shakadeep there is a big shaka tree from which the island itself, which the island takes its name. The tree is very fragrant. Indeed, it lends its scent to the entire island. Text 25. The master of this land, also one of the sons of Priyavrata, was known as Medhatiti. He also divided his island into seven sections, named according to the names of his own sons, whom he made the kings of that island. The names of those sons are Purojava, Manojava, Pavamana, Vrumranika, Chitrarapha, Bahurupa, and Vishvadara. After dividing the island and situating his sons as its rulers, Medhatiti personally retired, and to fix his mind completely on the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, he entered a forest suitable for meditation. Now why did he enter a forest that was suitable for meditation? Why? Yes, the atmosphere of a forest, the van. A forest isn't goodness unless the forest is Vrindavan, which is beyond the mode of goodness. It is transcendental. But in the Vedic culture, near the end of one's life, as one approaches death, one, even if one has taken seriously or lived according to the culture and therefore taken seriously the spiritual values of life, still, as one comes closer to the time of his death, one puts special effort into purifying the consciousness. What does purifying mean? It means removing the impurities. So one has to remove the impurities, not one has to, but it is in one's own best interest to remove the impurities within one's mind and develop on the other side an attraction to Krishna, especially as one approaches his own death, especially in the last years of one's life. And Prabhupada would always say, if one is to live 100 years, the first 25 years basically spent in education, and the second, and organizing things ready for the big thrust of one's life to achieve and to create this and that, have your family, acquire your wealth. 25 years for that, so up to 50, it's like that. And then 25 more years preparation for complete detachment. Vanaprastha, go live in the forest. And what should be the activities of Vanaprastha in the forest? Does anyone know? The basic, in one word, what his goal is? No?
Austerity.
Yes, it's austerity. Because if one has lived the prior 25 years in a way that you're just trying to make yourself comfortable, fighting with the material nature, moving this away and bringing this closer, the things that are enjoyable, bringing them closer, getting the exact right couch like that or whatever, and you know, organizing it so that your family members, you have 1,500 children or whatever, and the boys especially, they can go out and work and take over the business like that. And then, so you can take it easy and relax. The work is meant for future enjoyment. That's the concept. So you've spent 25 years, the idea is, just trying to enjoy, and now you have to break the habit. Because where does the desire for enjoyment sit? Of course it sits in the senses, but primarily it sits in the mind. Therefore, bandharatmatmanastasya yenatmaiva panajitaha. If one's mind is attached to sense gratification, it becomes an enemy. Because it will force the intelligence and the senses to do any old thing to please ourselves, our senses. So the 25 years, which one is that?
Maybe
Charles. Oh.
He was being pretty good in class. He was not making a noise or anything. Maybe actually did it prematurely.
Maybe he wanted to listen to class. Probably he wanted to give class, actually. That's more probably more accurate. But then when we give the fellow a chance to give class, he doesn't say anything worthwhile. This is a difficulty. So the Vedic system, so austerity, 25 years of austerity, breaking the nasty habit of the mind that the world is meant for my enjoyment and my control and my manipulation. And then the last 25 years, sannyasa is meant for preaching. Because one is realized, that's the idea. So he, especially if one's a king, one has to be in a particular mood and mode to be a king. One has to be very tejovirya, one has to be very powerful, strength. One has to be so dharmic, religious. One has to protect people. Kshatriya means one who cuts, one who hurts. He's willing to, for the protection of the citizens, he's willing to inflict injury on anyone. Even give up his own life. Fearless, chivalrous. Daryam. So this is the nature of a kshatriya. You have to be in a particular mood of I am the powerful controller, the Ishwara Bhav. Krishna mentions, this is the, Prabhupada translated, that's his leadership. But it is a particular mood of I am the controller. That's what it literally means. Ishwara, I am the controller. So therefore you should follow me. So that is the mood of a king. So one has to break that before one dies. If one breaks that, if one maintains that mood of I am the controller, I am the powerful one, dare and defy me, up until a certain point of one's life to perform one's duty as a king, it's required, because even if one dies in the battle, one will attain the heavenly planets. But at the time of one's death, one can't be in that mood. Let death approach me, I shall teach him some lesson. One can be in that mood. One can be a great fighter against death, but one will lose, because death is so many armed and we have only two arms. Death can come in so many different forms and it stalks us. Like a hunter stalks an animal. We'll lose. We must lose. Or we may think that I'll be the first person who survives. So far in history, death has won the battle against every single person. There's how many people, since the beginning of time, how many people... was even people, what to speak of animals and insects and birds, how many people have been smitten, have been reaped by the grim reaper? Death. Fighting, going down nobly, fighting to the last moment, but yet no one survives. It is the greatest of holocausts. So that Ishwara Bhavam mood does not help at the time of death. What helps? Complete dependence on Krishna with great devotion. Nothing else helps. Everything else will fill us ultimately with terror. All our abilities, our strengths, our power within the mind. I remember when I was a college student, there was some arty movie that I went to see, and the beginning of it was a Hungarian powerful magician, and he, by the power of his glance, he felt, and which means the power of his mind, he could manipulate the material energy. So it showed there were two pictures of him. One was, and he was in his cape and his top hat. and how the Russian tanks were rolling into what's the capital again?
Budapest,
yes. The Russian tank, and he was standing in front of one tank as it was rolling along, with his, and he was giving it the eye, stopping it, and the next picture was the tank crushing him. Sorry, no offense to Hungarian magicians if there happen to be any in the audience. It's like that with death. We may give it the eye and try to stop it using all our powers, mental, physical, or financial, or influential powers, but it will crush us. It will roll right over us when it desires. And there's nothing we can do about it. And that's one of the worst feelings that a human being he abhors in this world. It's helplessness. When things, what's the reaction? Everyone think of a time when sort of life sort of got out of our control. Think of a time when you really felt things were really out of your control. And what emotion fills you? Who can think? Raise your hand if you thought of a time like that. What emotion were you filled with?
Depressed.
Huh? What was that?
Depressed.
Yes, depressed. What else?
Terror.
Terror. If you only get depressed, you're lucky, I think. One becomes very, very, feels lost, empty, helpless, and therefore very afraid. Things are out of my control. That's what death is like. And at the same time, it's not like you can sit and think about it. You know, yes, now it's time that since things appear to be getting out of my control, I should collect my thoughts and breathe in and out 10 times very, very gently, and therefore not allow my mind to act up in any way whatsoever. Rather, I should... No, it's not like that. It can come at any moment. And then, or say if it's heart attacks. I once had the experience years and years ago, 25 years ago, I had, when I was in Australia in Melbourne, I had a job. I was working as a booking clerk in a hotel. And it was actually an amazing thing. This one man, they knew I was a Hare Krishna devotee. And he would tease me about it. Not tease me, he was more than, it was worse, nastier than teasing. And then one man, one night, that same man, he was also a booking clerk. He walked into the hotel and he had a heart attack right in front of me, and I fell into my arms and I had to carry him. And he was I can't describe what he was doing, but he was saying, he was talking about the pain that he was feeling. You know how we identify with our heart so much and our feeling? Just imagine the word, your heart attack. It means your heart attacks you. That thing that you identify with and you depend on it, it attacks you with the greatest pain. Anyway, the man after, he was asking me to pray for him. From that point on, he... So when that kind of pain, you can't collect your thoughts. Terror, simply terror. So practice is necessary. So what is the practice, actually, of preparing for death? Or what are the practices? Anyone have any thoughts on this? We should be thinking about this after all. What is the practice? Huh? Yeah, that's the ultimate practice. Yeah. What is that? How does that? What is the purpose of that practice?
To identify with the body and to know that Krishna's controlling
you. Yeah. Right. We're getting closer. Yeah.
Fix our mind on Krishna.
Yeah, but what's the purpose of fixing your mind on Krishna?
To death through Krishna.
Yeah, but what's the purpose of that?
To excite us. To go to Krishna.
Kola Krishna, yeah. But okay, this is a mind reading thing. I'm thinking of something. I have to guess what it is. Yeah, and what is that constitutional position? Yeah? Yeah? I'm saying yes. Because everyone's saying the things that are true, but it just happens to be not the one. Yes. That's exactly what it is. That is the essence of Sharanagati. What does Sharanagati mean? Yeah. Completely, but it is more than just taking shelter, not more than just taking shelter, but it's taking shelter of that, returning to shelter, actually, that's what it means. Returning to our shelter, Sharanagati. So the essence of that is Gotirte Varanam Tata, which means that one should completely depend on Krishna as one's maintainer. That he is everything for me and I am completely dependent upon him. That's what we are doing. So when we're in a difficult situation in this life, raise your hand if you don't know what I mean when I say a difficult situation. How old are you? Not you, the little one. Not the big boy, the little one. Excuse me, the young man. 13. Have you been in a difficult situation ever? Really difficult? Do you want to... Would you reveal it to us? The first day of school. It sounds terrifying. Those things are actually terrifying. The parents walk into those things because they don't get the exams, so they don't mind. As soon as there's an exam, everyone gets terrified, something like that. Frightened. But dependence on Krishna is what we are developing. That is Sharanagati or surrender. What does dependence on Krishna mean in our own words? What does dependence mean?
Knowing that you can't do it and Krishna has to help you.
Yeah, so that he is the only one. There's nothing other, no shelter other than Krishna. So what does one need before, because remember we talked a little about what it's like when things are out of control and what happens? Oh, horrible things. We become terrified. Now what happens when things are out of control and we're surrendering to Krishna and we're fully dependent on Krishna? Now what emotion is there? What do we feel?
Despair.
There's an honest man over there. Thank you. So when we're in a difficult situation, we can think of difficult situations, but what is sort of the definition, the general definition of a difficult situation?
Danger to the body.
Huh?
Danger to the body,
but it could be more than that.
Anxiety,
things are out of control. I mean, if things are in your control, you're not in a difficult situation, right? It has to be out of your control. Huh? The mind is becoming disturbed. So what? A difficult situation, out of control. Now what will make the difference between absolute terror and peace? So if we take full shelter of Krishna, we'll feel great peace, and if things are out of control, and if we don't take shelter of Krishna when things are out of control, we're in great terror. So what is the deciding factor? Is it taking shelter? What is the deciding factor?
Crying out help.
Crying out help.
That's, and realizing it's, that you can't control.
Right, but you have to. There's a joke I once heard. I think I told this before. About some man. This is a day for silly little stories in the Bhagavatam class from Bhagavatam. But some man falls off a cliff. He's walking along and he falls off a cliff. And the drop is like 1,000 feet down. And at the bottom are all jagged-shaped rocks pointed with sharp points. Just as he's falling, he's grasping, because he's grasping onto anything. And he grasps onto this small like tree, the root of a small tree on the side of the cliff. And there he is with his legs dangling. He looks down. He's calling, "Help! Help! God! If there's anyone up there, help me! Help me! Help me! If there's anyone up there, help me!" And suddenly, hears a voice. Deep and resonant. "I am here. Just let go and I will protect you." He looks down and looks up again. Says, "Help! Help! Is there anyone else up there?" Is that a good joke or not? Yeah, very heavy joke. It really is. It's a joke we laugh about, and we should laugh about it because it points fun at our position. But then we should think about it. This is my position, actually. So when we're in a difficult situation, so what is the deciding factor that makes us either fully peaceful?
The body of faith.
What did you say?
Protection.
Protection. But what is the thing in our consciousness?
Knowing that it's protected.
Yeah, and that's
surrender.
So faith. Surrender. So when we're, so that's what death is like, and Prabhupada said it is like the ultimate test. So when we're in a difficult situation, but not as difficult as death, which is the most difficult situation, what should we do? Practice. And how do we practice? Okay, Krishna, I'm going to take shelter of you right now, and please let me see. Let's see what happens. And then gradually, so in the next to last part of our life, the vanaprastha part of the life, when one is preparing for the last part of the life, the sannyas part of one's life, which is the preparation for death, we perform, the austerities are performed for what purpose? For the purpose of breaking our taking shelter of the fallible soldiers. Pashanapina pashati tesham nidanam pramata nidanam. Taking shelter of the fallible soldiers of this world, our family, when we're in trouble, like a little child, when they're in trouble, immediately they go to their father or mother. Or or some people that, you know, they smoke a cigarette when they're in anxiety and trouble. And other people they take an intoxication. And other people, when they're in trouble, they go to the movies. Another person, they. But what we have to learn to do is not take shelter of those things that aren't really capable of giving us the ultimate shelter. And learn how to take shelter of Krishna with a full heart and surrender. And that takes much knowledge about Krishna, and it also takes love of Krishna. Actually, it takes love of Krishna to do it properly. Faith and love. Without faith, there cannot be deep love. There cannot be love, actually, without faith. Because if how can you love someone who you can't trust? So therefore, so much of the Bhagavad Gita, so much of the Bhagavatam that we're reading, and they show us how powerful Krishna is, how he is created. And the second canto and the third canto, it describes the creation of the universe. And here, the universe is the structure of the universe. This huge, vast, varied, complex creation of the universe is done by, not by Krishna directly, but by Krishna's the Kalaṃsa of Krishna, the expansions of Krishna. So the expansion of the expansion, the empowered agents like Lord Brahma is doing this. So how powerful is Krishna? How capable he is to give us protection and for him to reciprocate our affection and love and faith and trust with. So this is all, this knowledge and this faith and this realization is precursor to developing actual love for Krishna. What does precursor mean? Prerequisite, comes before, it is a requirement. So the ideal life, or the sannyasi life, is just dependence on Krishna. That's what it's meant for. The preaching, complete wandering and preaching dependent on Krishna. This is wonderful. Oh, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's wonderful descriptions of this, the Avanti Brahmana. Thus wandering, everything that happens to him he sees as Krishna's mercy. This is wonderful, but this is a cultivation. This mood is a cultivation. It's not, we can't expect, as we tend to expect, speaking for myself, that, oh, later, it will come. It comes later if we start acting on it now. That's how it will come later. That's like a child walking, a baby's walking. Can a child who is 1 month old walk? No. But can a child who is 2 years old walk generally? Oh, yeah. So does that mean that if a child is thinking when he's 9 months old or so, if the child is thinking, well, I can't walk now, but by the time I'm two, I'll be able to walk, so therefore I should just wait. Is that how the child walks into? No. What do they start doing? They stand, they crawl, they stand, and then they take a step, and what happens? Fall down, and then the parents pick them up and they try again and they fall down, and gradually they do it. So what is the analogy that we are making? Well, what should we practice? Huh? Yeah, but in this particular context what we're talking about, what? Detachment on one side and attachment on the other side, and you put them together, and what is there? Dependence with great devotion on Krishna. Do we actually want that by the end of our life? When do we want actually our relationship to Krishna to fully blossom? Huh? This minute, okay. Soon as possible. I don't like that expression, as soon as possible, because that means right this second. I like the expression, as soon as practical. So we practically make our plan, because it's possible now, but then we don't do anything because it doesn't happen. But if we think in practical terms what it means, if we actually do want to live in our relationship with Krishna, then we have to take practical steps. And this is what it means to be a serious devotee, to taking steps, practical steps, depending upon who we are as an individual, what our capacity is, not imagining that, oh, from now on I'm going to always be something that I'm not now, because if we take that as soon as possible, we end up falling on our face in 1 second and then we don't get up again. So we should act practically and move forward. So this is the meditation of the devotee. How to make those steps. But that goal has to become clearer and clearer and more real in our mind. And what's required for that is hearing about Krishna. Without hearing, nothing good will happen to us. That we can count on. Even the Krishna Bhakti Janmamula Hoya Zaru Sangha, even the very root of devotion, which is Saru Sangha, association with devotees, what that means really is hearing. Because when we associate with devotees, it's not like we'll go for them and rub our elbow against them or something like that association. No, it's hearing from them. So hearing fixes us, it gives us sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. It gives us the knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. It gives us the practices, practical practices and processes, and it gives us the goal as well. Okay, so we read up to, got caught by the word, he entered the forest suitable for meditation. What do you think made this forest suitable for meditation? What makes a forest suitable for meditation? Chaja?
Silence.
Huh? It's peaceful, it's silent. What else? Think of it practically, yeah.
No wild animals.
No wild animals? What forest do you go to? Yeah, that's actually the fact. I was sort of thinking of it on the other side though. Key.
Cut off from material
world. What is especially cut off from? Mode of passion. And what does that mean, really? What does it mean, motive? What does it mean? Cut off from, what is the thing that's really cut off?
Sex.
Yeah. But what are we cut off from? What is the thing that we're cut off from? No, we can take our senses when we go to the forest.
Social life, civilization.
Civilization, yep. Which is in the mode of passion, which is based on the desire to exploit and enjoy. Materialistic people. That's basically what you're cutting yourself for, and all that, because materialistic people build a whole mood of sensuous enjoyment. That's basically what you're cutting yourself off for. That's why people go to the forest, because they want to be serious about spiritual life, which means cutting themselves off from materialistic people, people who are going to give them the idea, hey, me too, why not? I should be doing this too, I can really have a good time. Asat Sangha Tyaga Vaishnava Chara. So we don't go to the forest, we go to the temple. So that puts so much weight on the temple. What is the temple supposed to be? Not only they're not materialistic people, but they're people who are serious in different stages of seriousness about their developing their devotion to Krishna. People who are in contact with the hearing process, making progress, wanting to make progress despite limitations, wanting to go forward. In their advancement in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yep.
You were saying that one shouldn't criticize those who act in their official capacity. Two examples come to mind where great souls acting in their official capacity still come to strife. This one being Jaya and Vijaya, who were acting as officially as gatekeepers. And when the Kumaras came, they still acted as gatekeepers and copped it for it. The second one,
that would be a great BTG article. Jayan Vijay, cop it. To a certain class of people. That would be great. Okay, let's talk about that example. Okay. Who was at fault?
Well, ultimately, them is understood because they.
Who is at fault?
Kumaras are great.
Who is at fault? Was the Jayan Vijay at fault, or the?
Not from an official capacity, no.
But actually, it was the four Kumaras who were at fault. See, Krishna, right at the beginning, see, Krishna actually explains that, but he teaches them in such a way that they understood it, because he, when they cursed him, he immediately came running, and it's very interesting. It says that he came running on his lotus feet, right? But Garuda was there. Too. Now, why in the world did he come running if Garuda was there? So the Acharyas have explained that he was so much eager to protect his devotees that he even came by his lotus feet and didn't take Garuda. He didn't want to wait for Garuda, even though Garuda was there. This is wonderful. It sounds like a little anecdote, but it actually points to so much the wonderful nature of Krishna. So when the Kumaras saw that, and he said, and then Krishna said, Lord Narayan said, that you please forgive my servants that they were acting for me. So he understood, the Kumaras actually understood, and they say, your words are so deep that we cannot fathom their meaning. Because in criticism, you are... Because they understood, they did fathom his meaning, and what they understood was their curse, their criticism and being angry at the Kumaras was actually anger at Lord Narayan. And they understood their fault. No. Just be obstinate. He understood, they understood that their criticism of him, of the gatekeepers, the four Kumaras understood by the Lord's words, they understood that the criticism of the gatekeepers was actually a criticism of the Lord, that he had taken it like that because they were his people. So that's the first example.
Questions arise even from that. Okay, I understand that they still got cursed. Now one can say that's a pastime.
It was a pastime.
Yeah, okay.
And it was actually the curse by
life. Also said that although their official capacity was to be gatekeepers, the way they should have stopped the Kumaras should have been more in line with the position of the Kumaras as great salt. Isn't that also said?
I don't remember reading that particular point. It may be there, but I can't remember it. See, but when that is given, see, there's the ultimate lesson, which is the ultimate lesson is the ultimate cause was that it was Krishna's desire.
Yes.
Okay, that was he wanted someone to fight with, and he chose his own people. Basically, that's the ultimate cause. Then the one step below that is the Kumaras were incorrect,
right.
because they were actually in a higher position. And then one step below that, another lesson below that is that we should be very careful in dealing with exalted personalities and deal with them according to their position. So that lesson is already there within the nest of lessons. So one pastime teaches us many things.
second one was dealing with, I don't know the person's name, he was on the Vyasasan.
Ramahosan Sutta.
Yeah, Balaram came and he didn't stand up for him. Now officially he didn't have to, but here comes the Supreme Lord himself and he doesn't stand up.
But it wasn't that he didn't stand up. It was the not standing up was a symptom of it, the pride in his heart.
So this is ultimately the point I'm making, is that while one shouldn't criticize those in official position, those in official position have got to also be very cautious about their behavior in suggesting, sure. Oh, I'm behaving officiously and I can do
whatever I want.
This rule says this, and then I forget all the dynamics of my position and the care and consideration of the Lord's devotees and others around me. That was my point.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Good point. It's like the President of the United States. He has a certain realm in which he's the President of the United States, but that doesn't mean he can do anything he wants. He can't break the law in the name of it. So one has to be deep and of deep character and integrity and pierce and penetrate to the essence of a situation.